Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. The film by Robert Greenwald and Brave New Films takes you on an extraordinary journey that will challenge the way you think, feel, and shop.
I thought that a company like Walmart would take quick action to try and make the working conditions better.
Just bluntly told me, there's no place for people like you in management.
Members of management that are in the upper echelons of Walmart management talk about how women at Walmart are useless. District manager actually explained to us how to cheat workers out of overtime.
If you squeeze every dime out of them, you go for it. And it doesn't matter what happens to their families. If they fall apart, they get sick, you know, go to hell with them.
I don't think I've ever encountered a corporation, be it a power company, an oil company, as unresponsive as Walmart.
The company hides the fact that these practices are very systemic. They're systemic, meaning that they come out of the home office.
I didn't know that we weren't going to make it the goal to correct the violations, and I didn't think that any retaliation would be brought against me.
This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Our guest on today's program is Robert Greenwald, producer of Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. Even before the premiere of the Walmart movie this month, the responses from Walmart have been swift, ruthless, mean, and vitriolic. 6 weeks after the film was announced, Walmart set up the best campaign-style war room money could buy to discredit issues brought out by the film and Greenwald himself.
Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, takes you behind the glitz of Walmart's media campaign and into the real lives of workers and their families, business owners and their communities, in an extraordinary journey that will challenge the way you think, feel, and shop. And true to his previous blockbuster documentaries such as Outfoxed and Uncovered and Unconstitutional, producer Robert Greenwald continues to make major waves in this war for economic justice at Walmart. Well, with us now is Robert Greenwald, producer Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. It's in this film. You've gone through such pains to depict a kind of trap of the lower wage worker in middle America, if you will, and you've done an extraordinary job, and you really are to be commended for your efforts.
Thank you very much. It's been quite an amazing year working on the film. It's been exhausting. It's been emotional. It's been educational. It's been inspirational. Some of the people at Walmart, really their heroism in standing up both to Walmart and just the challenges of working for a corporation like that and the system that they have to fight against every single day. So the film, I hope, is going to be a tool in forcing Walmart to change its behavior.
It also makes very good radio, by the way. So, but the reactions back and forth, I mean, the film hasn't really, it's open to some extent, but it hasn't really opened in full bloom yet. And the reactions back and forth and the war room that Walmart has set up. Why don't you talk about the film's reaction, what Walmart's been doing, what you've been doing, Walmart's strategy has been, and then we'll return back to the film again also.
It's been quite a few weeks. First of all, the film opened in New York, and then November 13th, it will be available. We'll be having house parties all around the country. If you go to WalmartMovie.com, you can order your copy there. What's been amazing, what you're referring to, is that Walmart has launched a full-throttle, smackdown, takedown attack on me and the film. Many of you listeners, I'm sure, saw the New York Times, a front-page story. They've set up a war room in Bentonville. They put out a 10-page brochure wasting thousands of dollars attacking me. But get this, those of you with a sense of humor, they quoted old bad reviews of mine from 1980 and 1985. I mean, what went through the mind of these high-priced consultants? I was going to say, oops, I got a bad review in 85, therefore I better not do this film. I should go suck my thumb and run into the corner. Then they put out a video attacking the film. I mean, the amount of energy and time they've put into this, shooting The Messenger, is quite extraordinary. But, you know, on one level, they're right, because the reaction to the film is so strong and so emotional, and hundreds of thousands of people are going to buy this film and become organizers, because we don't have Universal Studios, we don't have Warner Brothers, but we have your listeners armed with this movie wherever there's a TV screen. I really know we're going to be able to go out and change hearts and change minds.
You really have built bridges. Not only is it good on radio and in the theater and on DVD, but the fact of the matter is what you're doing, which is an exceptional thing. Sometimes film is capable of organizing and mobilizing people by the strength of its message and its production. But you deliberately set out to use it as a tool to begin to organize people. And I was wondering really how you began to decide that your skill, your capability would be used graphically to be a mechanism for people to organize through.
It's actually very interesting, and I think, I mean, something that I've certainly learned and I think is important for all of us in the progressive community working to both organize and get our message out. I've directed three of these documentaries, and the first one was Uncovered about the reasons for the war, and the second one was Out Fox about our good friends at Fox News. And with each film, first I learned with the first one, I hoped, but I had no idea that it would be an effective organizing tool. But the great lesson was people took the film and they found ways to reach out with the first one. And then I said, well, you know what? We should do more of this. So on the second one, at Fox, we partnered with various of the media reform groups. And then on this film, I hired an organizer before one frame of film was shot. So the clear choice and the model was not to go film festivals or theatrical distribution. The model from day one was we're going to organize hundreds of activist groups around the country, church groups, to student groups, to the sweatshop groups, to women's groups, to labor, you name it, family businesses. And if you go to, again, if you go to our website, WalmartMovie.com, we have about 150 partner groups that cover the spectrum. Every one of them is going to find a different way to utilize the film as a tool, whether it's a meeting, a getting together at a student union, it's playing it in a restaurant, a bowling alley, a yoga studio. Wherever there's a screen, people will be able to say, come, watch this movie. And one of the wonderful things is, you know, we all have that classic problem, how do we reach people who may not agree with us? Well, your neighbors, your relatives, people at church, people you go to school with. Showing the film widens the possibility of finding folks who may not be exactly on the same page with us politically. And certainly, this issue of economic justice and corporate greed is truly one that cuts across narrow political lines. There are more Republicans in this movie than Democrats. And to hear them talk about Walmart is an education.
It does show you that economic rights are really are or should be the civil rights of this period of time.
Absolutely.
A five-minute clip from the film to give you a taste of the film itself and some of the issues that it covers.
I'm Kim Arcetta, and I'm a fourth and fifth grade bilingual teacher in Denver, Colorado, in the Denver Public Schools at Newland Elementary School. And Walmart received subsidies of about $1.7 million. And with that $1.7 million, our Denver metropolitan area, that could have kept the three schools that we just closed down this spring open.
It is right for the 1.2 million Walmart associates, including more minorities and more seniors that work at any other company in America. Walmart offers the right job at the right time in their lives, and it gives them a step up that economic ladder.
My name is Edith Arana. I live here in Southern California. I have two girls. I worked for Walmart for 6 years.
Walmart is fighting legal battles with scores of former employees in 31 states. Hourly workers who say the company has cheated them out of hundreds of millions of dollars in overtime pay. The Walmart Corporation paid approximately $50 million to settle an off-the-clock class action suit in Colorado. In Texas, it is estimated that they cheated workers out of up to $150 million in unpaid wages.
Our policy is that we pay everyone for every hour worked.
You're the CEO of Walmart, that's the best you can do. If you work here, we'll pay you. That's it? Work at Walmart. It's better than getting kicked in the nuts.
Our district manager actually explained to us how to cheat workers out of overtime. He said, this is how you can come in on your payroll budget for this week. He said, if you had, let's say, three workers that had overtime, maybe an hour or even 20 minutes over 40 hours, he explained to us how to go in the system under a false user ID to get into the computer and move that time to the next week.
The people that are struggling to just live on the basics every day or do without need that extra minute or two on their paycheck. And those are the ones that are victimized the most. I'm not the only one that did it. I've seen every manager except for one general manager do it.
When I started working there, I had so much pride in my job. I did. I didn't mind being there when they needed me. I didn't mind doing... I knew that we were short-staffed. At that time, I didn't know it was a purposeful thing.
The company doesn't allow the stores enough payroll dollars on their budget to get this job done, and the job is enormous. This company is rolling in the, raking in the dough in the sales. I mean, my store alone did over $100 million in sales the year that I left.
You know, if you squeeze every dime out of them, you go for it. And it doesn't matter what happens to their families. If they fall apart, they get sick, you know, the hell with them.
They would come in the office or on the floor. It didn't matter where you were working. They would say, well, you know, we have no overtime. There is to be no overtime whatsoever. We may have five baskets of clothes that need to be, and merchandise need to be put back. You may have 30 minutes left on your 8-hour shift, but we need those baskets put away. And they usually do it with a smile. You would go along with it. They would let you know one way or the other, if you can't do it, I'll just get somebody else to do it.
We're troubled by the fact that there are people who work full time, who in fact cannot provide enough for their families to live decently.
While I was working at Walmart, I was on WIC. It's an excellent program. It saved my life, really, because you got all the formula and cereal and stuff you needed for the baby. And I also went to the Medicaid office. It can be a real hassle having to deal with the offices, but, you know, at least they're there. I'm thankful for the programs that are available, you know. It's not a fun situation. It's demeaning. I always heard people say, you know, oh, they're just, you know, there's so many people who just use the system, use it. I can't imagine that, because there is no way I would want to spend any length of time having to do what you have to do to get assistance.
Retail giant Walmart is encouraging its workers to go on welfare.
Instead of paying for its employees to have health benefits, she says Walmart is making the government take care of it.
In Florida, Walmart has more employees and family members eligible for Medicaid than any other company.
This report from UC Berkeley researchers concludes Walmart costs state taxpayers $86 million a year and county taxpayers as much as another $25 million to pick up the tab for public health care, income tax credits, housing subsidies, and food stamps.
Come up with some type of health care that a full-time person can afford and don't have to put on the scale health care or feed my family.
Why is it that a corporation that in 2003 had an outstanding $240 billion in sales would not provide a livable wage and affordable health care for their employees?
Well, the question is precisely that. Why do we have a corporation that makes billions of dollars in profit, and yet its employees, if they want health care, have to apply for Medicaid?
Let's talk about the film itself. You use regular people, people who are workers, people who are managers, people who are business people, to talk this Walmart story, to talk about the injustices of Walmart. Why don't you say why you made the decision to go that way and tell us a bit about the film itself.
I find, and it's often in retrospect, there's like one or two key creative slash political decisions, because in these movies, it's always a combination. One doesn't make just a political decision, and one doesn't make just a creative or storytelling decision. Well, the decision I made early on, and thank goodness I think it's turned out to be the right one, was to go small and personal. In other words, I didn't want to get into a dueling economist battle with Walmart or a dueling factoid fight or studies. Not that there aren't all great studies and important economists and great people on our side, good jobs first, and all kinds of people who've done good work. But I felt what film could do would be to cut through the Walmart propaganda mission, if you will. They're spending $3,800,000 every single day to put out those ads and commercials to convince us that they're wonderful. So what I did was I went very intimate and very human. I kept saying to the group that was working on it, the Brave New Films group, it's Arthur Miller time. The more we can get into the souls of our characters, the more we will be able to humanize what's going on and turn policy, Walmart policy in Bentonville, into individual living and breathing characters. And then a widespread audience will be able to get it. So as a result, we have a story about a man and his family that worked their lives 40 years, as he says, went down the drain when Walmart came to town and basically eliminated his family grocery, and the reason being unfair competition. Walmart gets subsidy. Walmart gets welfare. Our tax dollars going to pay, so the Walmart goes into various communities. They get tax breaks and highways and roads and all that stuff. We have stories of a worker, a woman and her child, and how she was forced to be on public welfare while she was working at Walmart. Again, as your clip said, $10 billion in profit, and the taxpayer is paying because the corporation refuses to pay benefits for its employees. We have a young woman in China working in a sweatshop. She talks on camera. I find very powerfully and movingly about her experience of working in the sweatshop, and it makes it implicitly clear it's not the Chinese people who are the enemy, it's the multinational corporations that are creating policy, the race to the bottom, the suicide economy, as I call it. So those are some of the personal stories. We have about seven or eight of them. We have an environmentalist story, and then we have one of the great unknowns, and in the screening so far, people have been just ecstatic about this. We have a great story about Lane in Englewood, Los Angeles, where they beat Walmart. We have a story about some nice, lovely Republican lady in Chandler, Arizona, who organized her community and beat Walmart. And there are several hundred communities around the country who've stopped them. They've taken them on. They've organized these great coalitions between homeowners and family businesses and labor, and they're stopping them, and it's thrilling.
But, Robert Greenwald, we are told that Walmart has boosted the economy, lower prices offset decline in wages, say some economists. So why pick on this mega giant, which, in case our listeners don't know, is the largest employer in the world?
Yeah. Well, why pick on the largest employer in the world is an interesting way
you
that,
bully.
That only Walmart can think of themselves as victims, you know. I love it. Well, I mean, they do have a very, very effective distribution mechanism. It's good, it's efficient, and it works. I'm sorry that it's being used only for one goal, which is to squeeze every nickel out of us. But the studies that are coming in now, by the way, including the conference that they held Friday, in which the studies that were presented there, many of them indicated that the net result is a loss. I mean, think about it for a minute. If you bring in manufacturing, you're manufacturing a new product, you're making a new job, right? But retail, you're replacing jobs. So the studies that come in are indicating for every new job, I think it's one and a half or two jobs are being lost. The long-term study that just came out of the University of Berkeley, $4 billion in retail wages and retail economic benefit to our country is being lost because of Walmart. Now, there is an immediate fix. Small communities, it's like a little bit of heroin. You get a quick fix. But then, because they've driven out low family businesses, because they're destroying the main streets, because they're hurting the source for taxes in the community, you start to see it wither away. And then whether it's a year or two or three, Walmart is badly hurting these small communities around the country. And I hope that your listeners will use the film to get involved to tell the story, because it's by telling the story and organizing that, A, we're going to stop Walmart, and, B, we've got to raise this bigger issue, which is economic justice, corporate greed, how far are we going to let the corporations go, and what kind of a country do we want? And we're going to find unusual allies in this, people who may disagree with us on lots of other stuff. But around this economic issue, you know, first you divide, then you conquer.
I'm sure that many of our listeners in Staten Island are going to do that forthwith.
Good.
As a new, particularly right. Since there is a effort to plant a Walmart in Staten Island as we speak. So this is a great organizing tool, listeners. Now, aside from that, one of the things I was most interested in, while you kind of look at the Willie Lohmans and et cetera, is how did you develop the relationship with the people that you interview? How did you locate this broad swath of people from Germany to China to Bangladesh to people here who you clearly win the trust of and are willing to speak on camera about the demoralization, about the economic depression, and about such intimate details of their lives perpetrated by this miserable corporation, Walmart, that is so ultimately destructive to the working class?
Well, I've got an amazing group that I'm fortunate enough to work with at Brave New Films, and there are co-producers and field producers and researchers and a whole lot of volunteers because we didn't have much of a budget. And between everyone, there was enormous, just good old-fashioned hard work. I mean, we've been working on this. It's funny, I just left our weekly meeting, and I said, this is it. We've been together over a year having these meetings once, twice a week, and now Walmart Week and the theatrical release in the theaters is here. So it's been amazing. But in terms of finding these people, it was hard. You know, I'm not gonna pretend otherwise. There were many people who were terrified. The culture of fear at Walmart creates the environment. We arrived at, people had agreed to be in the movie, and then a camera lady would arrive at the doorstep, and they would have changed their minds. But it was lots of people going to communities, on the phone, doing research, talking to reporters, just every possible way we could. And one of the most effective people, I think, is Weldon Nicholson, who, again, if you go to WalmartMovie.com, we did a whole 8-minute piece about him that we couldn't put in the movie, a former manager, enormous conviction, tells stories that are just harrowing. And we found him because one of our terrific producers, Katie Borum, was interviewing someone else, and she said, you know, you might want to talk to this person. And lo and behold, emerged one of the sort of primary characters in the film.
Robert Greenwald, you've started a whole phenomena utilizing film. It's not the first time, but you do it in such a, and I mean this in the best sense, kind of formulaic way now. The film is there. It's accessible to people. It's digestible. It's palatable. It's good. And it's so user-friendly to get it. And we're going to beat back the Walmart attack, no question. And I have to tell you that one of the things that I always love as somebody who's been involved in graphic arts is the cover. And the cover is an octopusian kind of businessman with this cynical smile face. It always reminds me of kind of Chucky, you know, you use the sympathetic thing of a doll clown, but it's a sinister, brutal figure. Brilliant art. You're a great fellow. You really are. You add so much to the organizing process and the cause for economic and social justice in this country. And one of my favorite things about the film is that there's a kind of egalitarianism. Too often, there are not really a broad array of economic groupings within it, and certainly people from different racial backgrounds who have been really callously and viciously injured by Walmart. And I think you have started a great mass effort towards the unionization of Walmart and workers reclaiming the wealth that they really create in this society.
Well, thank you. But again, it can't happen without, frankly, shows like yours, listeners like yours. I mean, that is honestly what makes the difference. Without it, the film's, you know, it's a tree falling in a forest. So it's critical, the work that all of us are doing together, and it's thrilling to be part of it.
Well, we're going to go out with some victories that you portrayed at the end of your film of communities who were able to stand
Great.
Up to Walmart and win, and we thank you for that. And I'm going to go see it in the big movie house. I saw it in the video, but I want to
Great.
See it in a big movie house also, widescreen.
Robert Greenwald, producer of, filmmaker of Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, thank you for all the good work you do.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We came before the city council for the final vote, and the council voted 6-0 to deny Walmart and Vestar, the developer, the right to build the store on that property.
Residents of Inglewood, California are voting today on whether to approve the construction of a new shopping development dominated by Walmart.
That night, we gathered at a local restaurant, hoping for a miracle, but braced to go back to court if the measure passed.
And now, the votes are coming in on a proposed Walmart superstore in Inglewood.
3,000!
This small group of people took on a giant and won.
And it was really meaningful because nobody told me to win. The city needs to win.
Some bridges are falling down.
Some bridges
And this has been a Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report special, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And for more labor news and views, go to www.buildingbridgesradio.org. That's www.buildingbridgesradio.org for archived Building Bridges national labor shows.
Thornton, Colorado defeated Walmart.
Walmart beat Maine.
Walmart loses to Plainfield, Illinois. Las Vegas, Nevada defeated Walmart.
When
Walmart defeated Lakeway, Texas.
Louisiana
small group. Walmart defeated
Don't want you in a community.
Walmart loses to Charlevoix, Michigan.
Neighborhood fights off because
Walmart beat Louisiana.
Walmart loses to Chicago, Illinois.
Walmart zoned out. Flagstaff, Arizona.
Walmart rejects Walmart.
Stanwood, Washington. Victory, Colchester, Connecticut.
Success, Centerville, Utah.
Victory, Harrison, New Jersey. An anti-Walmart slate was elected to city council in Deptford, New Jersey.
Voters rejected Walmart in Lebanon, Pennsylvania.
The Walmart mayor
defeated in Glendora, California.
Walmart beaten in Medford, Oregon.